Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Basketball Fiends Podcast, a proud miembro of the R Esquina Podcast Network. I'm Jesus Acevedo Jr., and yes, I am back. I know you guys miss me. And with me, as always, at least today, since he has yet to miss an episode like yours truly, is Mr. Alex Aguilera.
What's going on, man? It's glad to have you back. I know it's only been like a week, but damn, it's good to have you back.
Shout out to Mr. Manuel Gomez, as the kids call him, Manny. He filled in for me. He does the Bodega Baseball on R Esquina Podcast Network. Definitely go check them out. They do good stuff. They have fun over there. But I gotta say, man, he kind of outshined me at times. So I was like, okay, Manny. Like, you know, he knows what he's doing on this podcast game.
Yeah, man. He knows how to talk. He warned me, like, I ramble, I go off on tangents, and I'm like, all right, bro, like, so do I. But hey, he wasn't lying. And I was like, oh, okay, like, that's why he's got his own podcast. So
that's exactly why. And now I think we got to go on a little rant ourselves, not rant per se, but just more so we want to pat ourselves on the back, because both of our hot takes and I think it was our second or third episode, one of our first episodes, we each had a hot take for the season. And by that point, I think the NBA was what, maybe average, give or take 15 games each team had played. Yep. Harden had just got traded to the Brooklyn Nets. Right. And we each made a hot take, and both of our hot takes came true. So that means that we are geniuses, Alex. That's pretty much the first big takeaway that I took from that.
I mean, I feel pretty smart when Phoenix advanced to the Western Conference Finals, and especially sweeping Denver too. I was like, man, I just feel like I saw a vision. Like, I had seen it even before we started the podcast. I had seen it from the bubble. I was like, these guys are gonna be scary next year. And I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go all out. I'm gonna say they make a run, and they're up 2-0 right now. So we'll see if they can keep it going.
Here's the funny part about my hot take. My hot take was that the Brooklyn Nets won't make the NBA Finals. Now, I made that bet thinking that is a long shot. Very long shot. I think that was even more of a long shot than the Suns making the Western Conference Finals, because the Suns, we all saw what they did in the bubble, and we all saw how Chris Paul improves teams. So while that was still a long shot, I don't think it's as long shot as the Brooklyn Nets not making the Finals, especially when you consider they had James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. So, you know, we'll get into the Nets and what happened with the Bucks. I definitely want to get into that. But, you know, we were correct. So I definitely want to say, for our first season of the Basketball Fiends, our hot takes were correct. Now, who knows? For the other seasons, we could go 0-for, you know, but at least for this one, Alex, let's enjoy it. Let's just, you know, bask in it.
Absolutely, man. Let's just revel in it, because it's just, man, we're both college educated, so you think, okay, we're smart, and then we call stuff ahead of time, and we feel even more smart. So, you know, it's all good. It's all good. We feel on top.
Now, I do have to say, we have been wrong though already. So let's not get too ahead of ourselves. You know, one of the biggest ones, I think both of us were just completely wrong. Like, people have to question us. Obviously, is the Atlanta Hawks and Trae Young. And Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks are in the Eastern Conference Finals, a place neither one of them picked them to be. And that team, and especially Trae Young, are part of this new blood that we're seeing in these playoffs. And look, I love this game, and I love this time of the season, NBA playoffs, right? Who doesn't love that? Now, in fairness, you can say that about any sport, right? That the postseason is the best time, granted. But now, bringing it back to basketball, we have been treated to some amazing and out-of-this-world playoff games, going as far back as to the playing tournament.
Absolutely, man. And hey, you know what? Those TV ratings, they're not bad, man. They're actually looking real, real good right now. According to the LA Times, I had seen from the playoff games last week. So, like, the second round semifinals matchups, they accounted for 5 of the top 7 top-rated primetime programs. That's
wow.
And of course, the leading one was the Game 7 between Brooklyn and Milwaukee as the front runner. So, yeah, man, not only are these playoff games fun and exciting with new teams, it's not just the LeBrons and the Stephs taking over in the playoffs. It's new teams, and people are watching, man. a lot of people are watching.
True story. As I was walking around Las Vegas, I would stop every now and then when I would see a TV out at the bar or at the restaurant. I mean, I just had to catch a glimpse of the game, whatever game was on. And I wasn't the only one. All of a sudden, I would be huddling there with other men, you know, while the wives were waiting. They were like, come on, let's go. You know, but that's how we were just so into the game. And look, the playoffs have been great. And this is from Yahoo Sports. The NBA's TV market share hit an all-time television. The viewership share for the 2021 NBA playoffs is the highest it's been since 2002 when the league started tracking it. So clearly people are gravitating back to the game of basketball. And they've definitely rebounded from the bubble playoffs and the ratings that got. Look, both of us watched it, but I mean, we're basketball fans, right? But these ratings are pulling in more casual fans. And I definitely want to talk about ratings and the new blood in basketball, because there was a tweet earlier from a journalist. His name is Tori. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. And he tweeted out that not having LeBron, KD, Steph, Harden, Luka, or any other big NBA star still in the playoffs in the Final Four is bad for the NBA.
Oh, I've seen that tweet.
And I completely disagree with that take.
I thought that was awful. I mean, not to bash him in that kind of way, but man, dude, like, this is honestly what people have been asking for these last couple of years, or probably like the last 10 years. Like, since 2010, it's always been LeBron in the finals, and then eventually when the Warriors started getting good, it was just LeBron, Steph. It was Miami versus San Antonio for those couple of years, then it was Cleveland, Golden State. So I mean, yeah, it's just really refreshing to now see different teams, you know, compete for an NBA title. And I think it's the complete opposite of that, dude. I think it's fantastic. I think the NBA kind of needs this in a good way. Not that you know, the NBA was faltering, kind of like how Major League Baseball is right now, but that's a whole nother
check out Bodega Baseball.
Yeah, don't talk
check out Bodega Baseball for that,
right? Don't talk more about that. But no, I think it's just super refreshing to see, especially now that, like you said, new blood, new guys, young guys like a Trae Young, like a Luka Doncic, like a Donovan Mitchell, that are coming into their own. And, you know, the light shines brightest when it's the playoffs. And you see it especially with Trae Young now, whereas, you know, he was just a star. He may or may not have been a household name. But after these playoffs, like, whatever happens in this Eastern Conference Finals, like, everyone's going to know Trae Young's name.
How many new fans do you think Trae Young has made? The same goes for Devin Booker or DeAndre Ayton after the Game 2 slam at Donovan Mitchell. This postseason is the passing of the torch to the next generation. That's essentially what this is, you know, and that's why we keep saying new blood. This is the new blood that's going to drive the NBA. And look, I sure we're going to see Trae Young's jerseys go through the roof. Same for, you know, Devin Booker. I feel like they're taking this game into the next level, into the next league. Now, here's the thing. Next season, everybody's going to come back, maybe hopefully healthier, and that's just going to improve the league, because that just means more competition. And another thing that I want to mention, every team left standing has something to play for, and by that, I mean none of the teams remaining have won a title since the NBA-ABA merger, with three of the four having appeared in a final series. The only one that has never appeared in a final series is the LA Clippers. So this means that now the championships are going to be more spread out to a new team, and that just means that market grows a bit, because maybe it gets more fans. Because let's be honest, a lot of fans become fans more so of players than of teams sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, so there's going to be a lot more Trae Young jerseys, you know, and you know, LA and, I mean, New York. So,
yeah, man, absolutely. So, I mean, it's just a testament to just how talented a lot of these young guys are. And it's just awesome to just see it in full display in the playoffs at that. And don't get me wrong, like, LeBron and stuff, like, they're not going anywhere. They're still hanging around. So, you know, don't think that after this playoffs, they're just going to be left in the dust. No, those guys are still, you know, the face of the NBA, but we're sort of seeing it like right in front of our faces, like right here and now, the next generation, the next era that's coming in, and that's going to take over.
I'll bring up back Trae Young, because I want to go on and talk about the Hawks and Bucks game 2 happening tonight. Before I get to my take on this, I do think the Bucks come back and win this game. I think they take game two, but I think that could easily change if they can't contain Ice Trey, which I believe is the nickname everyone seems to agree to call Trey Young. Because, you know, a nickname has to be given to the player by the fans or the media. And I think Ice Trey is the one that sticks out and just fully represents, because that man has ice running through his veins. Ice.
That man is cold-blooded. He is lethal.
Babyface assassin.
Hell yeah, man. You see, like, everyone's talking about the little shimmy that he did in the game. Like, I was watching that game, and I was like, what the hell did he just do? Did he just do, like, a little... Like, at first, I thought he was just, like, I don't know, like, repositioning his shoulders or something. I don't know. I was just kind of like, what the hell was that? And then I seen the replay, and I thought, oh, snap.
I thought he had dirt. I thought he had dirt on his shoulders. You know, he was just shaking it off.
Mm-hmm, exactly. He was just kind of like, he felt some discomfort and just needed to just like readjust or something. And then I saw like how he actually did it. I was like, nah, that looked a little bit on purpose, man. And he drained that three, man. That's awesome, man. I love seeing that stuff. That's like the equivalent of like a bat flip type of deal.
Young scored 48 points with 11 assists, participating in 72 of Atlanta's 116 points, matching only Kobe Bryant and LeBron James for the most points scored in a playoff game before turning 23. We should remind people, Trae Young is 22 years old. His best days are still ahead of him in this game.
It feels odd to say that I am also 22. So, I don't know if I'm doing as good as Trae Young right now. Probably not. But
make sure you question some of the choices you made so far in your life, Alex.
A little bit. I mean, I mean, I'm a college graduate. I think that's like the only thing I have over professional athletes is that a lot of these guys are kind of like one and done. I can just say I went the full 4 years.
Hey, but you hold that over his head, because that's like you said, that's all you got. But you use it. You hold it.
Because it's all I have. It's all I have.
For the Bucks to have a chance, you know, the game plan has to change. You know, offensively, they were right there with the Bucks. Giannis and Middleton went for 30-plus points. I think five players in double figures. But they were just letting Young penetrate the middle, and he feasted on those floaters. I don't know who told him, hey, Trae Young is not good in the mid-range. Like, did you not see the playoffs? Like, he's been killing people with that, where you don't know if it's a floater or if he's throwing it up as a lob. He's become genius at, you know, making players have to make a decision. So to me, that's what the Bucks have to do. They have to adjust their defensive game plan.
You know what? I like that. I was actually going to say, I wanted to point out two guys that I think the Bucks really need to, I guess, well, not necessarily utilize more. Here, I'll put it this way. Chris Middleton, we all know what he can do. He didn't particularly have a great game in game one. He shot, you know, 6 for 23 from the field, which is not good. That's not what we're used to seeing from him. I think he really needs to find some type of consistency, some type of rhythm, because I honestly feel like we've seen it throughout the playoffs where, you know, he'll erupt for like 30-40 points, and then the next game he drops off. You know, this is the Eastern Conference Finals, and, you know, outside of Giannis, he's the second guy behind him, so they really need a lot of consistency out of him, especially, you know, as a shooter, because, you know, Giannis is gonna, you know, penetrate down low. Chris Middleton is gonna be your guy to shoot the ball from the outside. And then I will also say Bobby Portis as well. Not that he isn't playing well, it's just that I think Mike Budenholzer needs to play the man a little more. I mean, he only played 15 minutes, but he was like a nice spark off the bench, man. Like, he's efficient.
Why is he going away from what worked in the season? You know, Bobby Portis Jr. was effective in the season, helped him out. Use him. Put him in the game. And I have to correct myself. I think earlier I said Chris Middleton went over 30-plus. It was actually Drew Holiday that went for over 30.
Yeah, it was Drew Holiday. Yep.
For the Hawks, they're playing with house money at this point, right? You know, you already took home court advantage. Sure, going back to the ATL up 2-0 will be great. But it's going to be harder for them in this game, too. But then again, I have counted the Hawks out and Trae Young since before the playoffs started, right? I thought they were going to lose in the first round to the New York Knicks. So who am I to say that the Hawks cannot win game two? And one last thing I'll say about this series is I'm super proud, extremely proud of Clint Capella, who had a great putback near the end of the game. I saw Capella develop here with the Houston Rockets, and a lot of Houston Rockets fans were very upset that they traded Capella, because they saw that he was still a player that was getting better, and he's had a tremendous NBA playoffs. He's always been consistent, getting either double-doubles or sometimes going for, you know, 20-plus points, but he's always there in a good defensive presence. And it has to be said, a lot of – because they have Capella, that's made Trae Young's game a little easier, you know, because he can use him whether to lob it up or fake lob and just shoot it.
Right. Him and John Collins.
Shout out Clint Capella.
Him and John Collins.
John Collins. Woo! That man can –
That's a nice young athletic front court right there.
4 and 5. That's a very young athletic. You called it. That's their future.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Hawks have their team set. Maybe you may want to add to maybe pieces for the bench or maybe see where you want to upgrade. But Trae Young, Clint Capella, John Collins. I mean, you could throw in Huerter as well. I don't even know if I'm saying his name
Kevin
right. But
Herder. Was it Herder?
Herder. There you go. Herder? Herder. Oh. I heard someone say he's the Red Mamba, so that maybe that makes sense.
Oh my god, man. That's funny. I actually haven't heard that one.
What the Red Mamba? Yeah, the Red Mamba. People just want to give Mamba name to everything. But hey, he had a great game 7, and speaking of that game 7 with the Sixers and the Atlanta Hawks, that was not how I expected that game to turn out. I fully expected the Sixers to pull it out, you know. And this topic, we're going to say what went wrong with some of these teams that got eliminated. And for me with the Sixers, you know, to me, it's two words pretty much. And it sounds bad to say this, but Ben Simmons. I hate that it comes down to one player. But, I mean, we all saw the game. We all saw him pass up a dunk or even layup that he could have attempted. Now, look, post-game, he said he saw Danilo coming over. The first thing I thought when I heard that was he could have gotten up and maybe got an N1. You know, and yes, maybe he misses the free throw, but at least he gets those 2 points. And even Joel Embiid said after the game that he thought that was a turning point. He said that those were sure 2 points. I really think it's a mental thing with Ben Simmons. But to me, if he would have just played half of the player he is in that fourth quarter, the Sixers are the ones playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. So that's, I think, my main reasons why the Sixers didn't advance in that game, I guess. And, you know, I guess in the series, you can see. I hate to put it all on one player, but, like, you know, we'll discuss it more in longer terms, the Sixers. But for now, that's what I'll say about the Sixers, Alex.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I'll just say that it's the most apparent reason that's just sort of out in the open that everyone can see right away is just the bad series that Ben Simmons had. And this isn't the first time that he's been super passive in a game as well. I remember reading an article when he was in LSU. It was the same dude. I forget who they were playing. But I remember, you know, at LSU, like, he was the best player on the team. Like, the LSU team wasn't very good, but everyone knew it because Ben Simmons was on that team. And there was an instance where you know, obviously they were playing. It was a tight game in the fourth quarter, and he passed up a lot of shots. And I think, you know, even then and to now, we still see that he isn't, you know, fully confident in himself, especially, you know, from an offensive standpoint, from a shooting standpoint, because we just kind of see he can't really shoot. And I don't think he's worked on it that well, or if he has, not to the extent where it's really improved in any way. Like, I know people went bonkers when he made a three, and it was like, oh my god, the man hit a three. And I mean, he can't really hit a free throw either. So I mean, I think the big thing with him is that I mean, there's a lot of talent. Like, the pieces are there for him, but he's just gotta apply himself. And you know, for him to just be super passive, especially in the fourth quarter, when a guy like him, 6'10", 6'11", point guard, you know, you need him the most, you know, to penetrate, you know, get to the free throw line. He just didn't do that.
And then from the Sixers, we'll go to the Brooklyn Nets, who were eliminated by the Bucks by an inch, literally by an inch, as Kevin Durant shot that game time two. He thought it was a three, but his 1 inch of his foot was over the line. And look, if Durant is playing in his shoe size, this doesn't happen. You know, as has been reported, he likes to play one shoe size up because he likes his feet to feel free. So it's just nuts, that 1 inch. You know, this shot is not unlike the Kawhi shot that eliminated the Sixers in 2019 that just bounced and bounced. You know, one bounced the wrong way and it doesn't go in. Same here. You know, if 1 inch, if he's 1 inch back, you know, it's a game-winning three. But what went wrong with the Nets? You know, I think for them it was their squad was depleted. Harden was essentially playing on one leg. Kyrie was out. And look, Durant did everything, but score one bucket in overtime. He just needed to score one, and you know, it's possibly double OT. Maybe they do pull it off. But you know, Durant did everything he could. But I do come back. I'm tempted to make a hot take right now and say that the Nets will be in the finals next season. I just feel they're primed to make a comeback. And look, another reason is Joe Harris missed a lot of open shots. You say you're a good shooter. I don't think you're a good shooter until you do it in the playoffs. I'm sorry. That's just my belief. You know, that's when the stakes matter. So Joe Harris is also partly to blame.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me is sort of right there with you is just that this Nets team was really banged up. Injuries definitely caught up to them. I mean, honestly, like in the beginning of the series when they seemed pretty much, you know, fully healthy, I mean, we saw them blow out the Bucks in game two. You know, I was with Kyrie. Was Harden playing in game two, or was that when he got hurt?
He got hurt.
He did get hurt in game two, right? So, I mean, even then with just two out of the big three, I mean, it was just a lethal force that Milwaukee couldn't stop. And then once Kyrie went down, even with, you know, James Harden coming back, like you said, he was on one leg. He wasn't 100%. He was more so of a decoy, just trying to be a playmaker and getting the ball to Durant. And, hey, Durant did all he could. I mean, you said it, the man balled out, but it just wasn't enough. I mean, outside of him, you know, Joe Harris, you know, was real cold in that series, which is a little surprising to me. I mean, Blake Griffin here and there. I mean, I think it was game three or four that he had a solid game. But, I mean, there wasn't really anyone else outside of Kevin Durant that was really going to do anything down the stretch. Like, you saw it in OT. Kevin Durant was the only one that was going to shoot for the Nets. So, I mean, it just boiled down to they were too banged up, and you can only rely on one man for so long, as great as KD is. So, I mean, that's honestly what did it for them.
And before we head to our last topic, I do want to talk about the Jazz, who were the best team in the NBA all season long. It's hard to make what happened with the Jazz. They were up 25 points, I believe. For sure, double digits. 25 points in Game 6 in L.A. And somehow they just let it slip. You know, Terrence Mann out of nowhere came in and had the most points he's ever scored in any professional basketball game or any official basketball game ever. Maybe when he was, you know, 5 or 6 years old, he went for 60 or 70. But in college or high school, this was or NBA, the most he's ever scored, 39 points. But something in me tells me I don't think Donovan Mitchell was fully healthy. You know, we may never know. They may never release. But I know there was times that you saw you know, when he picked up that slight knock. But I think also the Jazz's defensive scheme hurt them in the end. Gobert not stepping out on some threes really bit them. So I think the Jazz have to look at themselves, and if this is the team they're going to keep going forward, they need to be able to have multiple different defensive schemes, because I feel like the Jazz were like, this is who we are defensively. Try and beat us. And they did. As opposed to the Clippers. The Clippers are the kind of team they had. They can play different defensive schemes because they have different players to rely on. So I think that's the Jazz's homework for this season.
Hey, I'm honestly right there with you. It was kind of bizarre that Rudy Gobert sort of became this liability on defense almost. Like, we all know what he can do in the front court, just near the basket, just block 50 million shots. But when it came to perimeter defense, I mean, that's where the Jazz were really exposed. You know, the Clippers were able to draw him out from the basket, and that's how they were able to score, and that's how they were able to just dismantle that whole Utah defense. Not that it just is solely on Rudy Gobert, but hey, I mean, he's 3-time defensive player of the year. I mean, you expose him, you know, the dominoes fall along with them as well. So, yeah, I mean, and it still felt kind of weird because, like you said, like the Jazz were up by like 25 at one point. I mean, they had the game in control, and as it went along, you just saw once again, like Terrence Mann just decided he wanted to be a man and put up, you know, almost 40 points just out of nowhere, just cause. Well, I mean, not just cause. I mean, they needed a win. But yeah, I mean, you just sort of saw that collapse on defense, not all at once, but just as the game progressed and went into the fourth quarter. So, yeah, definitely something the Jazz really need to look at. I mean, I think they're still one of the best teams in the league, but, you know, I think they were exposed in that sense, and that's something they need to address moving forward if they want to, you know, take that next step.
This game, I always remember because it was my last night in Las Vegas, and Jisoo and I pulled off to a restaurant that had a view of the game. And the Jazz were up big, but I was like, I don't know, I want to watch this game. So we sat down, got some drinks, got some food, and I was like, that's where the comeback started happening. So you're welcome, Clippers fans. but the Jazz, you know, it's, you know what's funny about the Jazz? I was reading an article recently on NBA.com. It was about the 10 steals of the drafts in the past 10 years. And they had two Jazz players on there, the two Jazz stars currently, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. Both were, I think Mitchell was 15 around their pick. Gobert was in the 20s. So they were not in the draft lottery. And the draft lottery is our last topic. And I'm happy to say that the Houston Rockets have the number two pick of the NBA draft. And for a lot of Rockets fans, it was a very tense draft lottery because anything out of the top four and the pick goes to Oklahoma. So every pick came out, Rockets fans were just like, okay. Breathing a sigh of relief. I know Chicago Bulls fans in your area, Alex, were hoping to get into the top four, but they just didn't quite make it in. There was a couple draft mock-ups that had the Bulls getting high picks, but ultimately didn't go that way. But look, just to recap, the we'll go through the picks. Pistons get the number one overall pick. Rockets get the second pick. Cavaliers, the third pick. Raptors, 4. Magic, 5. Thunder, 6. Warriors, 7. Magic, 8. Kings, 9. Pelicans, 10. I'll just do the top 10. So what'd you make of the draft lottery, Alex?
I mean, it's the lottery.
Right? I asked you that question. I was like, what can you make of it? It was a draft lottery, you know?
I mean, it sucks that the Bulls couldn't get a fourth round pick, but hey, I mean, that's what the lottery's for. You mean you lose it to Orlando, and Orlando has the 5th and 8th pick, and I think Golden State also has the 7th and 14th pick, so those two teams each have 2 lottery picks as well. But hey, I mean, when the Bulls got the number one pick in 08 to get Rose, I mean, they had like a, what was it, like a 4% chance or something like that? Like, there was no way that they had no business getting that first pick, and they got it anyway. So, I mean, I can't be too mad. It sucks, but it is what it is.
And we should say before we continue that the draft is July 29th, which just feels really weird to say out loud, you know, the NBA draft lottery in July. But that's besides the point. I bring up the date because the basketball fans will have a mock draft special podcast episode dropping that morning. So definitely look out for that. We're giving you a month in advance notice. and we'll go through and, you know, really make our mock drafts. No, we might have some trades by now. But for sure, from what I'm already reading and from what we saw in last college basketball season, is that this has the potential to be a deep draft with a lot of talent. It's top heavy. I know it's something I've heard. It's top heavy. But then after that, it's really, throw the dice, really. There's some skillful players. There's some talented, but there's some talent in this draft is pretty much what I'm trying to get to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kate Cunningham out of Oklahoma State is probably the main guy that's going to go number one overall, whether it's Detroit, whether they decide to move that pick. I don't know. That's, you know, that remains to be seen. Which got Evan Mobley from USC, Jalen Green from the G League, who did forego college, then with the G League route. Jalen Suggs, we all saw what he did with Gonzaga in that Final Four run. Everyone remembers that basket that he made against UCLA. Scotty Barnes out of Florida State.
Hearing his name a lot. Yeah, Scotty, yeah. Barnes.
Yeah, Jonathan Kuminga, another G League guy, Jalen Johnson from Duke. So, I mean, there's a lot of names out there. Like you said, a lot, definitely top heavy.
Davion Mitchell also is another one that I wouldn't be surprised sneaks in there. And the reason why I think he's going to sneak in there is he has great defensive capability. And let's be honest, this is a guard league at the moment. You need to have guards that can defend. And Davion Mitchell has potential because he's a two-way player. He's not unlike Jalen Suggs. I just think Davion is a little bit more athletic than Jalen Suggs. I think Jalen Suggs is a little bit better overall player. But I think the top four picks, which is Pistons, Rockets, Cavaliers, Raptors, I think any of those four players have the potential I hesitate to say change a franchise trajectory, but they have that potential, any of those four. But I think it also depends on fit. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things when you draft a player is does that player fit your system and not just your system, your culture.
Yeah, you know, that's honestly a good point too. I mean, you can tout these guys however much you want, how talented they are, their athleticism, their scoring ability, you know, whatever the case may be. But I think one thing too that I like that point that you make that I don't think we necessarily address a lot is if it's a good fit for the team. I mean, yes, is this the best player in the draft and should you pass them up? I mean, maybe probably not, but at the same time too, is this a guy that you're going to be able to keep in the long run that you want to become your franchise player? I mean, look at already with Zion Williamson. I mean, the Pelicans, don't get me wrong, the Pelicans probably would have been really dumb if they didn't pick him number one overall. But already year three, and there's already this chatter that his family want him out. They want him to go to, you know, a big market team. So you look at the Pelicans front office and say, what do they need to do to change that culture to put pieces around, you know, your future in Zion Williamson? So I think you definitely bring up a good point when you say, you know, not only are you just picking, you know, what you feel like is the best player available, but a guy that's going to be able to fit within your system that you're running and just moving forward, become that guy that you hope will be, you know, a Trae Young-esque now that we're seeing with the Atlanta Hawks, with Dallas that we're seeing now that Luka Doncic is going to be the guy moving forward.
I want to speak on one more thing before we get out of here, Alex. You know, one thing I've told you a lot is I like defense, and with defense comes a lot of hustle, you know, and those are the kind of players that I think are sometimes overlooked in drafts, is players that just hustle and just are really good defensive specialists, and maybe not special, but just really good, have those defensive traits and defensive tendencies. And the reason why I'm talking about defense and hustle is because the Bulls, Thaddeus Young, was awarded the Hustle Award. Now, I'll be honest, I don't know how I didn't know that there was an actual Hustle Award that was given to a player. And so first, that's one. Two, I'm mad that the NBA doesn't make a more big deal out of this, because let's be honest, so many games are won on hustle plays. And just so people know, the Hustle Award is given to a player that shows the most energy and effort plays to help his team win. Bulls forward Thaddeus Young led all NBA players in charges drawn and offensive loose balls recovered on a per-minute basis. That's hustle. And I know you saw plenty of him, so I'm pretty sure you can attest to how much hustle Thaddeus Young does on the court.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, when you mentioned the offensive rebounds stat, I was like, dude, I've seen that all the time. Like, that dude was scrappy trying to create second-chance points, you know, for the Bulls on the offensive end, so definitely well deserving. Like, Thaddeus Young has honestly just been one of those players I always kept an eye on, always liked, just sort of admired his game, just a scrappy dude, like hustle, like, no pun intended, but the dude hustled all the time, pretty consistent, you know, wherever team he went, like, he just fits well with any system, you know, you build around him, or not necessarily around him. He just adapts to whatever situation he's in, whether it was with Philadelphia in his early years. That's where I remember, you know, seeing him at first. I remember in Indiana, he played well there too. So just honestly, like, any team that Thaddeus Young was on throughout his, I want to say, 14-year career, which sounds weird to say.
It does sound weird, because I remember when he got drafted.
Right, like, you remember, like, seeing him get drafted, and now this dude's like a 15-year vet, which is weird. But just any team that he was on, he always felt like some type of glue guy. Like, he just always fit well with any team he was on. So definitely well deserved.
Yeah, shout out Thaddeus Young, the Hustle Award. And yeah, you know, my dogs are barking because they like the hustle. You know, dogs love to hustle, right? Well, for a treat at least. But that does it for this episode of the Basketball Fiends. It was good to come back. I'm glad it was good 1 week off, but it's definitely nice talking and seeing your face again, Alex. We'll talk again next week. And that does it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, people. Don't forget to subscribe. See you.
Deuces.